Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm as well. Live link at thetrumpet.com. Coming up on this weekend edition, lots of headlines, lots going on in the news. We're going to take a look at some of the big events and also end today with a really, really positive story coming here out from Oklahoma, where we're broadcasting from, not too far away. Really great story to conclude today as well. We'll take a look at all of these events and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. You can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to do that at kpcgfm, and any emails you'd like to send, we appreciate getting those. Comments at kpcg.fm. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the weekend edition. Dwight Falk with you here today. Grant Turgeon, Abraham Londo. Other activities going on today, so they will not be with us today, but we look forward to talking to them again next week. Lots of activity here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, where we're broadcasting from. The summer camp that is held every summer for the youth is going on right now, so there's a lot of activity here on the campus just outside the studio windows here. We have a pretty good-sized lake, and some of the campers are out there canoeing, so they're having a fun time doing that. So nice summer day for it. It's pretty warm. It's going to be in the 90s today, which isn't bad at all for July. But if you are to believe the forecast going forward, they're saying next week it's going to be up to 108 degrees potentially. So if you're in the local area, it's going to be quite warm. It's been very warm in California, Arizona, other places. Of course, we expect the heat, but that's exceptionally warm. So might be warming up next week. The weekend might be a little cooler. So if you're in those hot areas, especially here locally, enjoy the weekend because that hotter weather's coming in. Some of the campers, of course, we hope to get them on the air and talk to them a little bit. We did that last year as well, and I think the year before. And so that's always a fun program to get some of their insights and their perspectives on the youth camp going on here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. So we'll see if that works out going forward. I think we'll have a chance to do that, but can't make any promises yet. We'll just have to wait and see. But those are always fun programs. A lot happening. We'll cover a few of the items here. This is from CNBC. I guess this is good news. U.S. non-farm payrolls total 222,000 in June. They were expecting it to be 179,000. So it's up from what they were expecting. The report, they say, is another illustration that the real economy is in good health. Well, that's what they say, of course. I think there's a lot of numbers that suggest otherwise, but still, this is somewhat of a positive number. That's what Paul Ashworth, chief U.S. economist at Capital Economics, said. The only disappointment is that wage growth still shows few signs of accelerating. So I guess people aren't making more money. More people are working, but more money isn't being made. So there's some positives there, maybe some that aren't quite as positive, but those are interesting numbers. And by some measures, the economy is doing all right. So it's interesting to see how that develops. Of course, President Trump has been known to be a businessman to some extent. I guess it depends who you ask about that. But it seems like the economy is growing for now, at least. So that's interesting. Here's another headline today. This is sort of a big story here over the weekend. I'm sure it will continue to be. And the title is Smoke on the Water, Hamburg Under Siege for the G20. The G20 meeting there over in Europe, and there's protests going on in Hamburg, Germany. No doubt you've seen some of the footage, pretty typical stuff. A lot of rioting and protesting, seems like tear gas, other things that the officers are using or the police are using to try to keep them under wraps there, but the protests continue. They say cars are torched, delegations' tires slashed. That's a fine welcome, isn't it? You show up for a meeting and you get your tires slashed. And flares fired at helicopters. Seems dangerous. Hamburg is living up to its militant reputation with activists giving the G20 a hostile welcome and in imaginative ways, they say. On Thursday night, on the eve of the summit, the leaders of the world's top 20 economies, including U.S. President Donald Trump, a protest march in this port city by 12,000 people quickly got out of hand. So that's a pretty good-sized crowd. You have 12,000 protesters showing up, protesting the G20 and other things. And, of course, on the headlines that we've been playing here on KPCG, there's been reports about those things going on. People upset about, I guess, the climate, pulling out of the climate agreement and a few other issues. And, too, I've read some headlines where the Europeans are somewhat rattled, they say, by President Trump's America First mentality and approach. They might not like that as much. So although he got quite a welcome there in Poland, and it was mentioned on the Trumpet Daily Radio show today with Andrew Locher was hosting that. He mentioned the Trumpet Brief. A lot of you probably receive that. If you don't receive it, it's a great little email that comes. It's a quick read, but it gives you some great headlines and some great insight multiple times a week. And it's free. You can sign up for it at thetrumpet.com. And yesterday, it talked about, Joel Hilliker wrote it, and it talked about some of President Trump's comments. And they were really interesting at that speech there in Poland. And so he talked about the West. Do we have the will to survive, the will to fight against forces that would want to destroy the West? So really interesting. If you don't have that, you can sign up for it for free and or visit thetrumpet.com and take a look at some of those write-ups. But so there is a little bit of friction there between the U.S., President Trump, and Europe and some of the different viewpoints they have for the direction the world's supposed to be going. And so they have these protests going on there in Hamburg. After a hardcore, they say, of around 1,000 black-clad militants ignored authorities' demands to remove their masks, riot police moved in with water cannon trucks and tear gas. So they always roll out the water cannon trucks, which they're pretty powerful by the looks of them, and the tear gas, try to remove the protesters without doing too much damage. Although, if you've ever been sprayed with tear gas, it's not a pleasant experience. Only happened to me once, sort of inadvertently. Somebody that I worked with had pepper spray, and it leaked or something, and it was quite the thing. So that can be quite an irritant for sure. They also say that the stage was set by these protests for hours of running battles between police and protesters in the back streets of Germany's second city that left 111 police officers injured. Those numbers are rising. Actually, some of the latest headlines are that there's 160 that have been injured, police officers. They say it was unclear how many protesters were hurt. The organizer criticized what he said was a heavy-handed and massive police response with batons. Well, of course, that's what they're going to say. They go out there and they riot and protest and cause trouble. They're slashing tires, shooting flares at helicopters, and doing all kinds of things, torching cars. And then when the police come in with water cannons and tear gas, they say, "Well, that's heavy-handed. You shouldn't come in here and cause us that kind of problem. Let us protest in peace." But they're not being peaceful in their protest. So there's a lot happening there. Be an interesting thing to watch over the weekend and see how that goes. There's a lot of times there's protests over the G20 over the years in different cities, but this seems particularly edgy this year. So a lot of details about that just on the headlines today. Here's an interesting story that relates to some of the what some people would say when they thought President Trump might be elected. Some people said, well, they were going to leave the country and do other things. We talked about it the other day, how actually people trying to leave the U.S. is down from where it was a few years ago. But some people did leave, and in this case, this fellow's coming back. George Clooney, you might know him. He's a famous actor. He's been in quite a few things, been on television and in movies, and he's fairly political. He's outspoken about his politics. Well, this story says George Clooney plans to move his wife and twins back to Los Angeles for security reasons. He doesn't feel safe over there in England, so he's coming back to Los Angeles. Apparently, he has recently made plans to move back to L.A. for the safety of his family after the latest spate of terror attacks in England. So as you know, of course, there's been multiple terror attacks there in England, and it's making people nervous, of course. And so those that, I guess, have the means to move about and maybe go somewhere else are doing that. And in this case, he's coming back to Los Angeles with his family because he feels that it's safer. They say he doesn't feel like his wife and his kids are safe living in the English countryside. He's determined to move his family to L.A., where he feels much more secure. That's according to an insider, I guess, that knows a little bit about his situation. So kind of interesting. A lot of people were outspoken about leaving the U.S., and then you see somebody come back because they feel it's safer. But it is interesting because at some point, where would you go? Where would a person go? Even if you had the money and the wherewithal to just pick up and move to another country, at some point, where do you go? You know, what if Los Angeles isn't safe anymore? Where would you go? Would you move to Germany? Would you move to Hamburg? Where would you go? And I think that's that is an interesting thing to consider, because for now, when people feel unsafe, if they can, they typically move where? The U.S., I guess. But what happens if that's not as safe as it has been? So eventually, where do you go? It's interesting. But so anyway, that actor is coming back, and he's pretty outspoken. So I don't know that he'll say much about it, but he feels like it's safer back in Los Angeles. Although he may want to read this next story before he comes back. It's from the LA Times. An animal control officer uncovered 80 snakes and a pool full of alligators at a home in the Thousand Oaks area. So I guess if you're out in Los Angeles, maybe you'll know where that is more specifically. This happens from time to time, probably in every part of the country. Animal control officers are called. They have to come out, and they find that somebody has too many cats. They're not being taken care of. Too many horses. Those stories are on the news quite a bit, particularly the horses. And people just sometimes have animals, and they don't take care of them well enough, and so people have to come out. These animal control officers have to come out and check. Well, in this case, they found a lot. 80 snakes and a pool full of alligators in this man's residence. So you can imagine how you would feel if you lived next door to this fellow. I think we all have a little bit of a natural fear of snakes and alligators, and that's probably a healthy fear. But this guy had quite a bit in his home. They say animal control officers on Thursday discovered a congregation of alligators and dozens of venomous snakes inside a home out there in the Los Angeles area, where twice in the last 3 years, a cobra has gotten loose and terrorized the neighbors. You imagine that. So, I mean, the fact that he has these things in his home is bad enough because it does violate some codes of what you can have. But some of them got loose. And so you can imagine, I guess word would spread throughout the neighborhood. You know, that's the snake house. That's the alligator house. And so you can imagine just, you know, if you let your kid ride his bike down the road or something, all of a sudden you have cobras out there. So it's been a problem. Hours after investigators searched this property, they recovered at least 84 snakes, and they had to take the guy away in handcuffs. Just 8 weeks ago, the next-door neighbor spotted a cobra slithering onto the property. The neighbor responded, as some neighbors would, by driving his car over the snake and killing it. So I imagine the neighbor that owned it wasn't happy, because that's one of his prized snakes. But still, what would you do? I mean, I probably would do the same thing. You see a huge cobra, you just either call somebody or run it over with your car, I guess, because it could be quite dangerous. So they get inside of this house, the officers do, and there's some video of it online if you want to look at it. It's just it looks like a zoo. Inside a murky pool on the property, they found crocodilians. It's a little bit of a different thing. They're 2 to 3 feet long, and they're identified as American alligators. So not huge, 2 to 3 feet, but still, you don't want one of those things crawling around in the neighborhood or in the swimming pool. And so that was a really strange occurrence there. They say inside the pool, where they found those alligators, as I said, investigators had to drain the pool and see whether other predators were lurking at the bottom. Never a boring day for a police officer or an animal control officer, is there? There's always something going on. I imagine they always come back to the station and say, you won't believe what I just had to see. So in this case, it was all these animals. More snakes, they say some venomous, were found elsewhere on the property. Altogether, about 84 snakes were recovered, as well as tortoises, birds, and other animals. So this guy had a full-on zoo going on. Among the very dangerous venomous reptiles, there was a spitting cobra, several of them, king cobras, and at least one mono-cold cobra. I'm not sure what that is. I probably didn't say that right either. Anyway, it's apparently not something you'd want around. The fellow that owned the place was permitted to possess dangerous and highly regulated reptiles at an off-site storage site, so it must do this for a job or something. So he had at least 20 snakes there, but then he was violating the rules by just putting them in his house. So that's a pretty interesting story. You see that happen sometimes where people do have too many animals, but in this case, extremely dangerous animals. Some parts of the country don't have as many regulations, and people will buy exotic animals that are not meant to be in somebody's home, including tigers, lions, all kinds of things. And they buy them, I guess, when they're young. They're probably fun to play with for a while when they're little, but eventually they get big. And so what happens a lot of times is the owners have to sort of pen them in because they become too dangerous. And so besides just being dangerous, it's not very kind to the animal. You know, the animal doesn't want to be penned up and be, you know, kind of enclosed in these small areas. So a lot of times they'll end up at animal refugee parks. You probably have been to one where you can pay a certain amount and you can go see these animals. And a lot of times that's where they come from. Somebody bought it. They didn't know what to do with the thing. And either they end up calling somebody to come get it or the neighbor calls or something. Because, you know, if you're in a neighborhood and all of a sudden you hear a lion roaring, that would be a sign of trouble. So that does happen sometimes. And then they end up at some of these exotic animal parks. Actually, a couple of years ago, I think there was a tornado that came through here locally in Oklahoma, and they thought some of the animals got out of one of those parks because the tornado went through there. I don't remember exactly what happened with that, but I remember that was part of the weather report was going on. And of course, they're talking about all the tornadoes and the, you know, be careful and the danger. And then there was another report that watch out for the exotic animals that are roaming the city potentially. So the kind of a funny story. Also reminds me too, last week on the news, you may have seen where it was an elephant that escaped from the circus. And I can't remember what the town was, but this family woke up and two small girls in the family. And the mom looks out the window and sees an elephant in their, I think it was their backyard or their front yard. And so, you know, very surprising, of course. And so she went and told the two girls about it, and they were pretty young and they didn't believe her at first. But sure enough, she was right. They caught it and took it back. But it went on a little joy jaunt, I guess, through the town and ate people's flowers and shrubbery, and they got caught again. So thankfully nothing bad happened there, but sometimes it can be a little more dangerous. Related to that, this is a really interesting story from Fox News. If you get a chance, you might want to look at the photo. It's pretty neat. Extremely rare pale tiger photographed for the first time ever. So this is a strange animal. It's pale. That's the best way to describe it. It says a rare pale tiger has been photographed in southern India, the first one that has been captured on film. As far as we know, you know, it's always hard to say the first time ever, but as far as I know, it is the first time. And the photographer by the name of Nilajan Ray said that it was raining on and off during the trip, and the rain had stopped for a few minutes, and the sun was about to come out, and the photographer said, I was driving, and then when I took a turn, suddenly something that looked like a tiger walked down the road, maybe 200 feet away. After a few seconds, it ran up the hillside and vanished, but they got a picture of it, and it's different than a regular tiger. It's a pale tiger, and they say the pale tiger is different from a white tiger as it is believed to have a genetic mutation that causes color morphism. So maybe some listeners will know a little bit more about the details of all those things that happen genetically, but really a strange thing to see. They have a picture of it. It is unique looking. I mean, it's definitely a tiger, but it has a different shade to it. So that's an interesting thing. Sometimes people are out taking pictures of different things and find some really interesting animals out there. So that's a pretty interesting story. Here's another one. If you've been to Starbucks lately, you probably have noticed that they are very much on the cutting edge of societal change, I guess you could say. Some cases I've been to some where now there's no longer a men's and women's bathroom. It's a just kind of either or. And I think they're just typically one person restroom, so it's not maybe a major issue, but it's different the way they're branding it. They are doing a lot of things for what they term the LGBT community. Not everybody is happy about that. This is from the Chicago Tribune. Malaysia, Indonesia, Muslim groups call for Starbucks boycott. And so, you know, the even though on some things, I guess those that would be Muslim and those that would be in the LGBT community, sometimes maybe they're kind of on the same side of things, or it can appear that way, but there's some really, really obviously strong differences there. And this is this highlights that. It says Muslim groups in Malaysia and Indonesia have called for a boycott of Starbucks because of the coffee chain support for LGBT rights. Anytime a business really gets into politics and or social things, it seems like it never works out because it's always going to make somebody upset. I don't know if they feel responsibility, like they think they need to be out in the forefront of social change, but it seems like if they just stuck to the business model of making coffee and such, that would be better. But they wanted to get into this, so now they're facing a little bit of a potential boycott. Malaysian group Perkasa, which supports a hardline form of Islam and nationalism, this week called on its more than 500,000 members to stay away from Starbucks coffee shops. This week and last, leaders of Indonesia's second largest mainstream Muslim group, Muhammadiyah, with an estimated 29 million members, denounced the chain. So I don't know if that's, you know, how many of those people would frequent a Starbucks. I mean, it looks like it's in other nations. But anyway, they're talking about boycotting a group. Anytime you've got a group with 29 million members that is boycotting what you do or denouncing what you do, it's probably not good. So it's going to be interesting to see how some of these companies try to ride the line between some of these social issues. Because on one hand, there's the LGBT movement. On the other hand, there is, you know, this sort of pro-Muslim movement that's happening in some places. But the two don't really coincide. And so it's interesting just to see how some of these businesses are going to try. The ones that want to step out and get involved in the politics and everything and the social issues, how they're going to react to the backlash. Because I don't know. Personally, I just tend to think that it's basically about making money for the companies. I don't know that they really have a strong take on it, other than they think maybe it's the popular thing to do. So I haven't seen too many companies come out and support something that's unpopular, like, say, in the media. Maybe you can think of one, but I can't, where a big company has come out and put their foot down and said, you know, no, we're going to support this cause that isn't popular. You don't see too many groups do that, because I think they're just trying to ride the trend and make them money. That's one of the key words in Starbucks, is bucks. So if you've been there, you know they keep asking for more bucks, because the stuff keeps getting more and more expensive. And bigger, too, by the way. There was a funny, like, little political cartoon, I guess, or a cartoon that I saw and talked. It said a large coffee. And it said like 1900, and it was this little cup. And then it kept going up and up to today, where it's this massive, you know, it's almost like a gallon of coffee or whatever they sell nowadays. Venti was the biggest, right? And then it went to Trenta, I think, or something like that. I'm not sure, but it's even bigger, in case the Venti wasn't enough. So they keep making the sizes bigger. But if you don't want to look too closely if you're buying like an iced latte, because there's a lot of ice and there's not a lot of latte in those things, unless you specify. But it's amazing how little the amount is. That's probably what that cartoon should have illustrated. It's not necessarily more liquid, it's just more ice and a bigger cup. So anyway, those are my 2 cents, right, on Starbucks here. But Malaysian, Indonesian Muslim groups call for a Starbucks boycott. There's some, I think, of course, Starbucks has kind of had the corner on designer coffee, if you want to call it that, for a while. And then local shops pop up and they kind of compete with them. And they're roughly the same price, where it's pretty expensive, $4 or $5 for a coffee. And then I think Starbucks wanted to come out and make a super Starbucks, a couple of places where you could go and spend like $10 or $12 for a cup of coffee. I mean, I like coffee, but I don't know. That's pretty expensive. It would have to be really, really good for that kind of money. And how much better could it be? You know, I don't know. So I don't know if that really succeeded or not. They've tried a few things. They've tried to have some places that sold wine. I don't know if that's succeeded. I don't go to a coffee shop for wine typically, although maybe it's kind of more of a cafe. Anyway, they're trying to keep their foothold on the market, but they're not pleasing some of these Muslim groups. Here's a story that's kind of interesting, and it's probably a good little warning too, just to be on the safe side. A 12-year-old gets stuck inside of a fold-out couch and has to call 911 for help. You can imagine that's a bizarre call to get. How did they get the phone in there? She must have had it in her pocket or something. But, you know, we've probably maybe we do have a fold-out couch or we've had them in the past. And you have to be careful, especially depending on the size of, like, a kid. They could get pinched in there. So a 12-year-old girl playing hide-and-seek got stuck in a folding couch, prompting emergency crews to rush to her home in Virginia on Wednesday. Colonial Heights Fire Chief A.G. Moore told the TV station WTVR that the preteen was playing with another girl when she got folded into the sleeper sofa. Her friend was not strong enough to get her back out, which would be terrifying. And with no adults at home, called 911 for help. Where were the parents? Who knows? The person that took the call said it sounded like a very odd call. I wanted to see what was going on. I've never seen anything like it. They added the situation. It's a situation where those sofa beds can be awkward and heavy to begin with. And when you have a child in there, it takes a lot to pull her out with the additional weight. Yeah, if you've moved those, you know that's true. It's hard to move those things around sometimes, especially if you're not an adult. And so people can get stuck in there. Thankfully, she was okay. It only took emergency crews about 2 minutes to free the child. But that's a nice emergency call to get, right, where you can solve it pretty quickly and no problems. And she wasn't stuck on any metal pieces. So depending on how you got folded up in that thing, it could be more serious, but in this case it wasn't. When she got out, she was fine, they said. Firefighters stayed to speak with the girl's parents, who were not home at the time. I don't know if you get in any trouble for that, but it seems like you'd at least get a little bit of a reprimand. They say, don't try it at home. Pick another spot to play hide-and-seek. Don't get folded up in the folding sofa, especially if you don't clean it very often. They won't find you for weeks. But I'm sure they would have heard her when she came home if she was... She was making some noise in there, but that would be really scary, be stuck in there. I don't know if there'd be a threat of suffocation or anything like that. There's always warnings against getting inside of freezers. It's always a big thing to tell kids, don't get inside of a freezer because you can't open it from the inside, and people have died that way, thinking it was a fun hiding spot, but they couldn't get back out. So you have to be careful with some of those different furniture pieces you can have in the house. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, and thanks for joining us online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well, so there's good places to listen. You can listen at the TuneIn app also, and all kinds of places. We have the archives online there too, so if you miss a program live, you can always download it, listen to it later. Lots of listeners enjoy doing it that way. We are in the age of the podcast. So you can do that and listen to it at your leisure. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at KPCGFM. We'll send out tweets occasionally with some programming info for you. And any emails you'd like to send those to comments@kpcg.fm. We get some good ones from listeners, some interesting story ideas and other things. So send those along. We're happy to take a look at those for you. The station has a lot of great programming this weekend, the Key of David program with Gerald Fleury coming up throughout the weekend. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with today's host, Andrew Locher. I think the first time that he's hosted the show. And so a really interesting program talking about the United States of America. Of course, we're just coming off the 4th of July. People are proud of the United States and excited about some of our history, and that can be really good. But where are we today? It's interesting. Is there a hypocrisy in the U.S. where people will say, God bless America, and sing that? But then what are the actions? So there's some really interesting stories that are brought out, news stories and things that are going on that highlight some of the issues here in the West, especially in the United States. So make sure you listen for that program. It's coming up here this weekend. And again, if you like the podcast, you prefer that, that's available to you there at kpcg.fm and at thetrumpet.com, a few other places as well, but those are the main ones. Also, check thetrumpet.com for the latest headlines, latest stories. One of the top stories this weekend is The Gospel of Liberalism, What Happened to the Church of England I Used to Know by Kieran Underwood. And also related to that, Cracks in the Anglican Cathedral Widen, and Anglican Bishop Quran Should Be Used at Prince Charles' Coronation. You never would have heard of that a few years ago, I don't think, but that's sort of the common thinking today. And so those are some of the top stories there at thetrumpet.com. If you haven't been there in a while, give it a look. Stop and check it out. It has some new features, Trumpet Talk videos, some other features as well, headlines over in the right corner, just news headlines pulled from the web, and then some of these synopsis pieces. So really good stuff there at thetrumpet.com. And also sign up for the Trumpet Weekly if you haven't done that. Or sorry, the Trumpet Brief, rather, where it gets sent out several times a week, gives you some good updates about some of the headlines. And also the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program this weekend. Make sure you listen for that. Watch Jerusalem, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot going on. Can't highlight all of it, but you can find the schedule, and you can find all the programs there at kpcg.fm. So make sure you stop and check that out. Well, we live in a very interesting time, and I guess we don't think too often in the West about the potentiality of a nuclear attack. We probably should be thinking about it on some level, because there's, of course, North Korea. They're very active in trying to launch missiles and have been doing that throughout the week and last few weeks and months. There are nations that are definitely not friendly to the U.S. that have plenty of nuclear capabilities. The U.S. has nuclear weapons all around the world that we've stationed in other places in Europe, and they're sitting there. And, of course, there are those weapons here within the U.S., not to mention just the threat of a dirty bomb or some sort of a terrorist getting a hold of some weapons, and that can happen too. So this is just an interesting write-up, I think, that sort of highlights the fact that maybe some people are starting to think about this a little bit more. I've been reading a book, it's very famous, on Hiroshima, and it used to be required reading, I don't know if it still is, where it talks about the experiences that people had, that they went through when the bomb dropped there in Hiroshima. And it's a hard read because it's a terrible, the things that happened, but it is the reality. And of course, today the weapons are stronger. But this is a write-up from the Business Insider. It says, if a nuclear bomb explodes, these are the emergency supplies you should have prepared or grab on the run. Now, again, if you know much about, say, Bible prophecy, that's probably not something you're going to be thinking about too much in terms of trying to survive a nuclear attack with some supplies. But it's interesting, at least, that they are trying to talk about that, or at least bring it up here in this Business Insider piece, because it is a reality. It is a potential that could happen. You don't like to think about it, of course. Nobody does. But there's a lot of weapons out there. And unfortunately, there's never been a weapon made that hasn't been used, at least not, you know, to some extent. I suppose there could be like a particular one that hasn't been used yet, but history shows man has used what they develop. And so they say in this write-up here that a small nuclear bomb set off by a terrorist is one of 15 disaster scenarios the U.S. government plans for. So they do have to plan. They have to have some plans, I guess. I was trying to think of a different word for it, but steps in place, procedures, that's what I was thinking of, in place in case something happens. What do? They can't wait. The U.S. government can't wait until something happens and then say, okay, well, how do we handle this? So they're making their plans now. They have plans for this, and that is one of their fears, is that a terrorist will get his hands on something and set it off. They say radioactive fallout is the biggest danger for those who survive the initial blast. So if you know much about the history of how that works and what happened in Hiroshima and stuff, I think that's a pretty obvious point. The initial blast does kill people, but then obviously the radioactive fallout causes sickness and death in many cases. They say sheltering indoors is important to lower radiation exposure, but you'll want a few items to help you make it through the first 24 to 48 hours. So the government has a recommendation on what you should have in case something like that were to happen. And the things they say you should have, they're pretty standard, I guess, but a radio, water, essential medications, and food that you can move, I guess. FEMA has a more complete supply list for emergency preparedness kits, which it recommends every American family assemble. So they recommend that people have some sort of a kit, and it could be for any natural, it could be for any disaster, whether it's natural, man-made, and maybe to some extent it's not a bad idea. I mean, when a storm's coming, it's a good idea to have a flashlight and something to listen to the reports on. It used to be a radio. I think nowadays we always carry our cell phones, but still, it's not a bad idea to think about some of those things. But here they're talking about it just from the standpoint of the threat of a nuclear attack, and it, particularly from a terrorist. And I just think it's interesting. I'm not trying to be an alarmist or to say anybody has to get a kit together, but it's just interesting that they're writing this stuff up. and maybe some people are starting to be a little more, take the threat a little more seriously, to some extent. They say North Korea on July the 4th reportedly launched its first intercontinental ballistic missile, a rocket capable of traveling more than 3,400 miles with a weapon on top. The feat suggests that the isolated country, which is one of the nine nations that together wield more than 14,900 nukes, can strike Alaska. So if you just stop and think about that number, 14,900 nukes, right? How many would it take to do just absolutely terrible damage? Well, just one in the right place. We have 14,900, and I don't know where they get that number from. Is that everything? Do they know where everything is? I'm not sure, but they know about 14,900 nukes. And North Korea, they think, could probably strike Alaska. So that's a pretty severe threat. And it, you know, it does seem sort of like, oh, it wouldn't happen, but it very easily could. And so it is something that, like, people here in the Business Insider are starting to at least think about on some level. They say a national planning scenario number one is a 10 kiloton nuclear detonation in a modern U.S. city. This is something that they're thinking about. Brooke Budmeier, a health physicist and expert on radiation at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, told Business Insider, a 10 kiloton nuclear detonation is equivalent to 5,000 Oklahoma City bombings. Though we call it low yield, it's a pretty large explosion. So that's the number one scenario that they're looking at. 10 kiloton nuclear detonation in a modern U.S. city. And again, I mean, it's not trying to be alarmist, but this is what the government's thinking about. What if this happens? What do we do? And if you think about, of course, those in the listening in the local area, I know very much about, of course, the Oklahoma City bombing and how devastating that was. But this, if there was a 10-kiloton nuclear detonation, it's equivalent to 5,000 Oklahoma City bombings. I mean, you can just imagine that in a city. There would be, if it was near buildings, it would take down how many buildings? Thousands. How would you even get emergency responders in there? You couldn't even begin to go through the wreckage. And, of course, there'd be radiation. So you probably wouldn't want to even go in there. That's some of the things they're looking at, and that's the low yield. This is a world we're living in. This isn't pulled from, like, the, you know, the conspiracy archives or something. This is right out of a Business Insider. Budmeier couldn't say how likely such an attack might be today, of course, but the concern isn't unfounded, since weapons-grade nuclear materials have proliferated in recent years, along with smaller kiloton-class bombs. And while governments do their best to safeguard nuclear weapons materials, there's no guarantee a terrorist couldn't succeed in obtaining them. And there was a really good write-up in Time magazine a while ago about that, about how the terrorists are just working very hard to get their hands on radioactive material, especially stuff that's coming out of what was the former Soviet Empire. When that fell apart in the early 90s, it was a free-for-all, and people were stealing that material and trying to sell it on the black market. And there's a lot of agents that are paid through UN funds, mostly coming from the U.S., I guess, to try to intercept people that were selling these weapons. And they catch people all the time trying to sell weapons-grade material to terrorist organizations, or what they think are terrorist organizations. These are people that don't have a lot of money. They don't have much of a living. They're barely existing. And if they can get a quick payout of a few million dollars to give some, you know, radioactive material, they're willing to do it. And so that is a real threat. One of the things that has happened, too, is that there was radiation monitors set up on the borders of some of these, what they call the nuclear highway over there in the Russia area and down into the Middle East. And so they could track, the U.S. could track who was shipping stuff, where it was going. Well, when Ukraine was invaded and that war broke out, and I think Georgia too, I'm not sure exactly, but some of those regions, a lot of those detectors were destroyed in the battle. And so that's one of the things, you know, we talk about a lot of times, or the president talks about, say, the U.N., and maybe not being as supportive of it in some things. And the UN's definitely a corrupt organization, but there is some funding that goes through there that does help with things like this. So there's a lot there to look at. But like they say in this write-up here from the Business Insider, the concern that potentially somebody lets off a nuclear bomb in a city, even a low-yield one, which is massive, it's not unfounded. It isn't unfounded, and the government knows that. And that's why they have emergency plans to some extent. So what should we be thinking about? I mean, if they're thinking about it being that serious of a threat, again, at least we should be concerned to some extent. It says, should a nuclear blast occur near your city or town and you somehow avoided its skin-searing flash of light, crushing shockwaves, and incendiary fireball, take shelter immediately. They have a full fallout survival guide linked here to this article. And it's just interesting that they're talking about it. And, of course, they want people to have emergency kits and so forth. They say, would you have considered Oklahoma City a likely target? Talking about the Oklahoma City bombing. They say, we think it's worthwhile for everybody to think about preparedness for any kind of event. So, again, it could be just a natural disaster or something happens, but they're really thinking about the possibility of a terrorist doing something like that. And you see the chaos a terrorist causes when he drives a vehicle into a crowd of people and jumps out with some knives. I mean, it shuts down cities. What if there was, you know, nuclear material ready to be detonated outside of or inside of one of those vehicles or something like that? And again, you know, we're not trying to be alarmist, but I mean, this is the world we live in. It's very interesting, and these are the types of things people are, to some extent, thinking about. Probably not as much as they should, but in some ways, you know, it's scary to think about. And so that's why I think people just don't do it. Bud Meyer said that the best plan is to round up the emergency supplies at ready.gov. That's a website, which is also there on the on this write-up here from the Business Insider. Bud Meyer says this isn't just for the nuclear Holocaust event. This is for general emergency preparedness and making sure that you and your family can be safe in an emergency. And so it's I guess some forward thinking, and you know it's maybe not a bad idea to plan in some ways. But really, what would you do? What could anybody do if an explosion like that occurred and there was fallout? What could you even do? All those people, you know, just because you have a little survival kit, would it help? I don't know. But they don't have. I mean, there's no other answers. What could they tell you? Just forget it. You know, we're in a hopeless case. But that's really the truth, isn't it? I mean, if you talk about the numbers that they're giving here, that there's 14,900 nukes on this earth, and that's what they know of, what are you going to do? You have to guarantee that no human being out of all the billions would ever be crazy enough to launch one. How could a person guarantee that? You just check the news, right? I mean, you see people are doing all the time some of the craziest stuff you've ever heard of. Now, not all of them have certainly... the ability to go launch a nuke, thankfully. But, you know, with all the rhetoric and all the talk between nations and all the disagreements, the thought that that would never happen, I think that'd be pretty naive. And so it's just interesting that the Business Insider wants to talk about this and take this article on and take this topic on. And they're actually talking about what you would put in an emergency kit for a nuke. So it's just very interesting to see the thinking there. They say if a full emergency preparedness kit isn't handy, say on public transit to or from work, they recommend trying to grab a few items just as long as it won't delay your taking shelter from fallout by more than a couple of minutes. You know, what are you going to do? I mean, go inside your house? How is that going to help too much? You know, the thing too is that this has been a real concern for a lot of people, particularly after 9/11. In the New York City area and some of those bigger cities. I mean, people were really, really, you know, had a lot of anxiety, and they did have, you might remember at the time, they had a whole list of procedures, what you should do. You should put plastic up on the windows, right, and tape around the windowsill. And I don't remember all of them, but those were some of the procedures that I remember people seeing. And so they're talking about this now in terms of a nuclear attack. They say item number one, you should have a radio. Ideally a hand crank type with a USB charging port, which can power other devices. If you have a cell phone, that'll work too. Maybe it will, unless you don't have service. Bud Meyer said he prefers a radio over a mobile phone because sometimes the cell towers may be affected. Yeah, that's true. Either by power outages, crushing demand, or an invisible yet powerful effect of nuclear weapons called electromagnetic pulse. There's some thought out there that that one of our U.S. Ships was disabled for a while recently, the one that got hit. I forget, it was over by Japan, I think. And I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, this EMP, that is something that people are trying to use to damage electronics. And so they go through this list of things to have, you know, the radio, water, of course, some breakfast bars, you know, things like that. I, can you imagine putting that together and thinking like, well, I might actually need this at some point? But that is the reality that people are living in. And of course, if you've checked out thetrumpet.com at all, you know that there's a lot written there about that. This, they are right in the sense that there is a very real threat out there for something like this happening or some events along these lines. But nobody's going to be saved by an emergency kit. That's for sure. There has to be a better answer than that, and there is, and you can find more about that at thetrumpet.com. But just fascinating that the Business Insider would say, look, if a nuclear bomb explodes, here's some emergency supplies you might need. It's, you know, because North Korea and these other countries, and also countries they're not even looking at right now, but are going to be a bigger threat. So you can see more about those threats and what the solutions to them too there at thetrumpet.com. It's not a hopeless situation, but emergency kits aren't the answer. Although it's not a bad idea to have one for like a, you know, a storm or something like that. That's not a bad idea. A couple other notes here real quick before we end today's program. This was talked about a little bit on the Trumpet Daily radio show today with Andrew Locher. He was talking about a rise in some STDs in the United States. And this is related to that. It's from Fox News. WHO, the World Health Organization, warns of untreatable superbug gonorrhea found in at least 3 patients. This is something that's been happening to where there is an infectious disease of some kind, a superbug, and so they treat it with antibiotics. Well, they mutate and they get stronger. The World Health Organization said it is likely being spread to others through sexual activity. The bacteria that causes gonorrhea are particularly smart, Teodora Wee, a human reproduction specialist at WHO, said. Every time we use a new class of antibiotics to treat the infection, the bacteria evolve to resist them. That's what happens when there's a lot of antibiotics being used. It the bugs advance. They become super bugs. And then if you can't use antibiotics, what do you use on them? The STD can affect lots of areas of the human being. I don't need to get into all the details. But they say it's estimated to strike 78 million people per year. Gonorrhea is often asymptomatic, and if left untreated, could cause a variety of diseases, infertility, as well as an increased risk for HIV. These 3 particular cases, which were detailed in the journal PLOS Medicine, were confirmed in Japan, France, and Spain. No known antibiotic has been effective in treating these patients, and they say they think it's just the tip of the iceberg. So, Not great news there, but again, that's why does that disease exist? It didn't come out of nowhere, and there's certainly risky behavior involved if people for those that are getting it. Here's a good one to end on. There's a lot of things happening in the world, not a lot of them good, unfortunately, but there are some really good things, and it's nice to see a really uplifting story. I saw this yesterday, and I was really impressed by it. It's from Oklahoma here locally. Oklahoma officer honored for adopting an 8-year-old boy that he saved from severe child abuse. So, a terrible story in the sense that, you know, there was child abuse involved, but the fact that the officer it did more than just respond to the call, but he's actually now raising the child, I think is pretty outstanding. And so it was just and there's a lot of negative press about law enforcement officials and I think unfairly in many cases. But you see some amazing stories like this where they're just doing just incredible things. And so I think it's worth highlighting. They say an Oklahoma police officer was honored last week after he adopted an 8-year-old boy that he'd saved from severe abuse in 2015. Police officer Jody Thompson was awarded a certificate of commendation in Oklahoma. He'd also adopted He's also adopted the boy's little sister, too. Thompson responded to a physical child abuse call in 2015 where he met the boy named John, according to police. The boy was in pretty bad condition. The officer said he hadn't really seen anything that bad. So it was a really terrible deal. But the officer took the boy to an Oklahoma Children's Advocacy Center, and then he drove him to the hospital where he stayed with the child until the next day. And a few days later, Thompson became a certified foster parent and brought John home. So he not only saved the boy's life, he's going to give him life in the sense of raising him. And they have a nice picture there of him and his family. They say at the time, the officer is saying, at the time, I had a 15-year-old and an 8-year-old son. When I brought John home, I didn't tell them or my wife. Surprise. The Thompsons welcomed John into their home in April 2015. 7 months later, they brought home John's baby sister after she was born while their biological mother was in jail. So a situation where the actual parents were not fit to be parents, and here this officer and his family step in to help. They say John's biological parents reportedly gave up their rights as parents, and he was officially adopted in August 2016. After a lengthy trial, the Thompsons adopted Paisley, John's sister, in February. They say John is amazing. He's a straight-A student on the honor roll in the gifted and talented program involved with the local drama club, Thompson said of his adopted son, who is now 10 years old. Isn't that fascinating, right? I mean, here's a kid that was being abused, horrible conditions, but given the right circumstances and given a father, even though it wasn't his biological father, but a father and a family that loved him and took care of him, and lo and behold, look what you have. You have a child that's a straight-A student. He's on the honor roll, is in the gifted and talented program. You have to wonder how many kids are out there that have become adults or are still kids that have that potential, that have that ability to do some amazing things, but because they're in a bad situation, they never have a chance to develop and to show what they could do. I think it's really interesting. I have a situation where when my daughter was born in the hospital, we had to stay there for, I guess, a day or two, you know, while they made sure everything was ready to go before we went home. And so the day we took her home, I remember being in the nursery where they had all the different babies, and the nurses are signing them out to go home with the parents. And I overheard the nurses talking while I was in there looking at my daughter, and they were commenting how sad it was for them to give away or to send some of these babies home because they know they're going home to bad situations. They're going home to really difficult situations. And it really hurt them to do that because they're just, you know, they're beautiful little children and they have their whole life ahead of them and they have so much potential. But some are going home to good situations and some are going home to bad situations. And the nurses know it, or they have a pretty good, you know, feeling based upon the people they've been dealing with, but they can't do anything about it. But they're sending them off, you know, on their journey. And I had never thought of that before from, say, a nurse's perspective, but it was really interesting to overhear that. And I don't think they knew I was kind of eavesdropping on them. I wasn't trying to. They were talking fairly loudly, I guess. But to hear them just speak that openly, I thought, wow, that's a really challenging thing. And so here's a case like that where this boy was in a really bad situation with his sister, and this officer steps in, saves him, and then raises him too. So just outstanding to see somebody do something like that. They say the officer, Jody's actions, as well as his family's, are second to none. The example of love and compassion he has shown to this young man and his sister is an example everyone should follow. And I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Not everybody can do, obviously, what he did, but just that idea of caring for somebody. It's not even his own flesh and blood, but he saw a really bad situation and he stepped in, not to help them for a day or a week, but for the rest of their lives. You know, that's just an amazing example. And so this is an officer that's not too far here from Oklahoma City that received this honor for this amazing act that he has done. He has adopted an 8-year-old boy that he saved from severe child abuse and the sister. So that's police officer Jody Thompson. That's an incredible story and a really outstanding example. So that's a positive one to wrap things up with here over the weekend. Make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show that's coming up this weekend with your host, Andrew Locher, today. He was filling in, so a really great program about America. Are we a hypocritical nation to some extent? He looks at some interesting details about that. Also, the Trumpet Hour Week in Review program that's coming up here in a bit. Trumpet writers talk about some of the big events of the week. Make sure you sign up for the Trumpet brief that can be emailed to you. It's a free email, and it comes a couple times a week, a few times a week. Some of the big headlines of the week, really outstanding write-up, and especially this week with what's happening in Europe with the G20 and President Trump and some of his comments. Really important Trumpet brief to check out. Sign up for that. It's free at thetrumpet.com. If you don't have it, you can get it there. Also, stop and check out thetrumpet.com. Top stories, The Gospel of Liberalism. What happened to the Church of England I used to know, and cracks in the Anglican Cathedral widen, as well as Anglican Bishop Koran should be used at Prince Charles' coronation. Lots of great stories there at thetrumpet.com. It's a fairly new site in the sense that it's been revamped. There's a lot of new features. And if you haven't checked it out, make sure you do it. Make it your homepage. Why not? And you can see the main stories that are going on there. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio and Trumpet Radio Live. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for being with us here at 101.3 KPCG and also online at thetrumpet.com and kpcg.fm. For myself, Dwight Falk, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.